This is episode number 57 of DevOps Paradox with Darren Pope and Victor Farsic. I am Darren.
And I'm Victor.
Dude, you got to get closer to your mic. What is up?
Closer. And yeah, I'm Victor.
Okay, cool. Today we have another guest Okay, you have to get closer to your mic. I need a new mouth. We have another guest with us today. Victor, would you like to introduce Tracy for real?
Tracy. She's a very brave woman. I'll tell you why, because she's trying to do something I would say would be impossible. To put all the different vendors in this continuous integration, continuous delivery sphere into one group that works together. Hard to imagine, but she's trying. Did I describe it well, Tracy?
Yes, Victor. Thanks for having me, and thanks for telling me things can't be done, because there's nothing like that as motivation to keep trying.
Okay, and Tracy, why don't you go for everybody that doesn't know you just by Tracy, are you like Beyonce? You just
yes,
go by Tracy?
That is the goal.
Okay, all right, that's the goal. But let's go and give a little bit more info about yourself.
Yeah, hi, everybody. So I'm Tracy Miranda, and I'm the Director of Open Source at CloudBees, and also the current chair of the governing board of the Continuous Delivery Foundation, which is a brand new foundation I helped set up in 2019.
That's a mouthful for a title. I mean, Victor, prior to his new role, had a mouthful for a title. I'm just services consultant. So, sort of like, everybody's sort of seen Charlie Brown, Peanuts, right? All I got was this rock. That's sometimes what it feels like. And you're like with CDF, we'll call it CDF just to shorten up Continuous Delivery Foundation, since my mouth isn't working today. Is it like herding cats?
Yes. No, absolutely. It's a big ecosystem in an area that has existed for a long time, but it's changing really quickly, and we've got developers, we've got vendors, we've got all sorts, and really that is what it's all about, just trying to get everybody moving together in the same direction.
So you say you have application developers and you have vendors. Those seem like competing interests in many cases.
Yes and no. And I think when it comes to Open Source Foundation, at the heart of it, it's really all about finding the win-win, you know, not putting things in opposition to each other, but actually saying, you know, vendors serve a need and, you know, developers can have benefits at the same time. There's no one group that needs to win and the other one loses. But how do we do that with open source and all together?
So explain what an open source foundation is, because I don't know. I mean, I sort of get it, but it's an umbrella, but that's about as far as I understand it.
Yeah, no, I think it's worth covering. So when we think of open source, I think for a lot of people, it's just, here's some code, it's in a GitHub repo, and I'm going to submit a bunch of pull requests. And, you know, for a lot of open source, that works well. And, you know, you've got a license file in there as well. But as projects sort of grow and mature, then they tend to be a lot of, well, stuff that's really boring to developers around it, stuff like governance, stuff like, you know, just the brand of the project, how it evolves, how it gets people to do things that nobody wants to do, like documentation and security. And really the role of an open source foundation is to make all that smooth, make the project sustainable, handle all the boring stuff so that the developers, the open source developers, just can just come in, commit the code, and focus on the stuff they want to do.
How many open source foundations are there? I mean, there's a number, but
loads.
I mean, loads meaning 10, like high tens, like approaching 100.
Yes.
some of the big ones are like Apache, obviously, is one.
And you've got your Apaches, your Eclipse foundations, and your Linux foundations. Within each of the major ones, they've already kind of evolved to house small, you know, sub-foundations. So Linux Foundation has the, you know, CNCF, it's Cloud Native Computing Foundation, CDF. You've got all sorts of ones for automotive and IoT. In Eclipse, you've got the IoT working group, loads of working groups. So almost every major area of software today will have a bunch of open source foundations helping sustain the projects in that area.
So that's I actually knew it, but I'd forgotten it. So CDF is a child of Linux Foundation.
That's right.
Okay, so who are the top, because I'm assuming Linux Foundation is the parent, like is a root, if you will.
Yes.
Right. So who are the other big roots?
Eclipse Foundation and Apache Foundation.
Is that pretty much it? Those are the big three.
No.
Okay.
There's a bunch of others. Okay. You know, if you think of projects like Python, the Python Software Foundation. There's loads.
Yeah, there's lots of them, but if you want to sort of compare it to the cloud providers, the big three are probably Apache, Eclipse, and Linux.
Yes, certainly from my perspective and the bias I bring to it.
Yeah, but and how does that work? Are you looking into different projects and then contacting them to join the foundation? Or is there some kind of call for action? Oh, whomever is in this area of software, please join. How does that work?
Yeah, well, I think one of the interesting things about the Continuous Delivery Foundation, like traditional open source foundations, we have a bunch of projects, Jenkins, JenkinsX, Tecton, and Spinnaker. But we also see our role as a way to almost democratize continuous delivery practices across the industry. So how do we help people adopt it? And how do we do some cross-pollination across emerging technologies? So with that in mind, we want to cover, you know, a lot more of the software lifecycle, and we need more projects to do that. So we'd love to, you know, not have 10 projects all in one area, but to have projects that fit with continuous delivery, whether it's continuous delivery on, let's say, mobile or aspects of it, like testing. So I'd love for the foundation to grow and to have projects that cover kind of the full range of continuous delivery for different industry. Now, how we attract that, I think that's probably one of the big challenges we're facing today. Just finding those projects and making them aware that they can come in and join us. And it's worth their while. So, yeah, any shout outs to any folks part of open source projects, please do reach out. And, yeah, happy to just talk to you about how we can help your project.
So let's say that there is a person right now listening to this and he's having a project that does whatever it does, right? And it could fit. What would be the hook? What would be the benefit that person would think about and say, yeah, actually, this is a good idea?
Yeah. So I think the key thing first is to come in and be part of our community. And it comes down to the people we have there. We have some great forums where we're talking about how to drive technology moving forward, you know, how should tools interoperate, what even is an application in today's world, how do we set those bounds. So being part of that community and, you know, just having the conversations with the smart people is probably the top thing. The second thing is just access to a bunch of project services. We can help with a logo, we can put you in our swag store so your community members can get access to stickers. I mean, who doesn't love stickers? We support you with infrastructure for your projects. We've got analytics for helping grow your community. So there's a DevStats platform that shows you who's contributing. And the list goes on. So there's a whole bunch of services of things like that kind of, you know, just help sustain you, and you just don't want to be spending your time dealing with all those kinds of things when you just, you know, want to help the users of your project.
Yeah, so if I understood right, it's not necessarily that somebody should think about joining right away, but it's more like a call, come, join, let's talk type of stuff, right? And then see how useful that is, right?
Yes. For sure. Projects get proposed to the technical oversight committee, and then essentially they need a member of the TOC to get really excited about the project and then sponsor it through the process. So what do you think, Victor? Do you think that would appeal to all the projects out there, the folks listening?
Yeah, I'm pretending as if I don't know about it. I mean, I do, but it is. I always thought that at least the way how I imagine, I might be wrong. You know, it usually starts with a person that has a great idea and that grows. People come, right, and then you at one moment hit a ceiling. How far that project can go without either a backing of an enterprise company behind it, or being in a foundation like that. At least that's what I was always, how I was always imagining, right? There are certain phases, and maybe first 1,000 users you want to go alone because that's kind of easy, and then you need certain governance, certain rules, and growing community and all those. Marketing, actually, as well. Not marketing as in selling, but marketing as in being present in events, spreading the word, right?
Exactly. Yeah. No, I think that sums it up nicely.
Now, you brought up governance. Mm-hmm. Why would a team, a project need governance? I mean, even if I got to, 30 or 40 people, why would I need governance? It just seems like overhead.
Yeah, because people, fundamentally, people kind of work well until they don't. And then when things start kind of going wrong, you need to fall back on kind of rules and ways of solving issues or ways of evolving the community in a specific way. And I think one other side, like we saw with Jenkins as well, I exist in the kind of open source that is used by enterprises. And for enterprises to engage, sometimes the governance needs to be really clear. You can have open source that is, tied to a single company, things like VS Code, so you can contribute as many PRs as you like, but how are you ever going to get commit rights to that repo? That's governance. And then when you have governance in a foundation, then we're talking about multi-vendor governance. So, there's no one company that controls who gets commit access to that repo. It's set out by a process, and it's made clear who are the people who approve basically giving access to things. And that's what governance is all about. How do you manage that access to the code and to the other key assets of a project?
How efficient is that? I mean, it seems like there's got to be process. I'm not bucking process. Mm-hmm. But it seems like, especially if you've got multiple vendors in there or multiple externals, trying to come to an agreement can be near impossible.
I think it's like anything. It depends on the set of people. It depends potentially on the competitive landscape. If you're talking governance around a project, which is very cutting edge and causing, the landscape to change, then there tends to be a lot of politics. If you have a certain company in the room, who I won't name names, suddenly things get a lot trickier. I think we're fortunate with many of the projects in CDF that it is a good balance of, having process but not having it be overkill.
And we mentioned the names that were in CDF, or actually we have five. Did we mention the names of who's actually in CDF today?
The projects?
Yeah.
I touched on them briefly.
We mentioned it, but let's be explicit with it. I mean, we got Jenkins X.
Yep. So the four founding projects, Jenkins and Spinnaker, probably kind of fairly well known and quite heavily adopted. And then you've got kind of the newer, more nascent projects, Tecton and Jenkins X, which are really tackling that cloud native space.
Define cloud native. I want to hear it from you. as a big, what is cloud native? That's a question we need to start asking everybody. That as soon as somebody says that phrase, we need to ask them what it means.
Okay, so I don't know. Do you want a technically correct definition, or do you want a just a practical? So depending on, I mean,
I want both.
Okay, like I wrote a blog post when I went to my first cloud native con. I remember I wrote a blog post, and at that time I said, you know, for all intents and purposes, at that time, and this was maybe 2 or 3 years ago, cloud native means using Kubernetes. You know, and to a certain extent, and I know there's lots of purists who will argue with that, but I think from a practical side, it is about kind of using that platform well, and then perhaps the related technologies that go with it. I don't want to run the risk of talking about all the, you know, there's the cloud native AWS or the cloud native Google. So I think, yeah, just Kubernetes and using that aspect of the cloud well.
I mean, I would kind of define it slightly differently, that there are certain properties of being cloud native, like scalable, maybe stateless, and so on and so forth. Probably 12-factor apps is my base for cloud native in early days. And going back to Kubernetes, at least in my head, I would say that Kubernetes is probably the best enabler to be cloud native. Now, it's not that you cannot do it without Kubernetes. I mean, everything can be done, right?
Yeah.
But simply, it simplifies so many things, so many cloud native properties, that it is almost considered as a requirement, simply kind of, it's almost, yeah, you're trying to do that without Kubernetes, that there must be something wrong with you today.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think just grounding things in practicality, I think that's why, you know, I'll flippantly reduce it to that. And, you know, we know it's not the case, but, you know, until people know what questions to ask and what makes a difference, I think it's a good starting point. And, you know, we can talk about the other thing we talk a lot about with things like Jenkins X is, you know, the characteristics of a modern application. You know, things like using a modern programming language, being cloud native, using microservices, and just having continuous delivery. And I think that's the direction folks will start thinking about, you know, what does it mean to have those characteristics for your application. And something like Jenkins X is really good because it not only lets you do that, but it models doing that in a practical way.
What is it? Boy, you're teeing me up today. What is a modern programming language?
Modern programming language.
No,
yes.
No. D.
So as a kind of you know, an overall definition, it's basically a programming language that was built to take advantage of kind of modern processor architectures and things. So things like Go and Rust. Okay. And not
I'll say it. Not Java.
Not Java.
Not COBOL. Yes. Okay, no, I say not Java. Let me ask the question. This is to both of you. Does that mean no JVM based languages? What do you think?
So I'm not following JVM that closely for a couple of years already. But from what I've seen, it changed also a lot. Now it's much smaller. It can be, you can combine things you need instead of having the huge monster. I understood it's not that bad anymore. I'm not politically correct, so I'm actually indirectly saying it was bad and it might not be bad today.
Yeah. Well, compared to EJBs and all the other stuff, then that's one thing. What you would not want to do is containerize an EJB application. That would just be dumb.
Right. Yeah, that brings me. Does anybody know, is J2E still alive? Does that thing exist?
Yes. I see it almost every engagement that I deal with.
So isn't it widely accepted? Nothing ever dies. I think this Hudson is out there somewhere.
Okay, so that's reasonable. So because you could take something like Vertex, which is a lighter weight JVM'd project, right? And there's other ones, like Drop Wizard, which was, right, all the smaller Quarkus. There it is. Quarkus was the one I was looking for, right? VM-based language. It's out by Red Hat. I love Quarkus, and it's built to do the cloud-native things, right? So this, it can be done. I question whether a language matters. It's the packaging of the application that is the question.
That's the thing, you know, what bothered me in the past with Java, and I'm not following now, so it's kind of, you needed 57,000 different ways to do the same thing. And my interpret Java as, you know, Quarkus and all those things are most likely workarounds to solve an underlying issue, which is Java in its core form, right? Which is great, kind of, you're improving it. But the fact that you need all those things means that there's something wrong in the baseline of that something, whatever that something is.
Yeah, and you know, I'm a big Java fan, and I think everything has its purpose. But when you kind of look at where the evolution is, I think the big questions for Java, especially, like, imagine this world which is headed towards a kind of serverless type architecture, it comes down to some fundamentals like, you know, cold starts. And, you know, can you resolve those? Can you work around those? And I know many people are trying to figure that out, and have no doubt they will come up with something. But, you know, there's a lot to be said for things that were designed with the understanding of the modern architectures in place.
So let's you said the S word that I probably should go ahead and, like, beep out. Not that S word, serverless.
Sorry. Sorry, we have come a long way from where we started.
No, we're actually in the right place, because how does continuous delivery even play into serverless?
You know, that is a great question and something I ask myself a lot, because I think, you know, on the CI/CD landscape, we have barely dealt with containers, and we have barely dealt with microservices and what that means for your environments, and how do you deliver to all these different environments. And then along comes serverless, and that's even more of a kind of a gut punch to everybody. And, you know, things, the whole paradigm is going to change, and things will have to change, and we need to start talking about kind of event driven delivery almost. And in the world of serverless, I don't know what that looks like. What you have today tends to be very either non-existent or very built into an existing platform. But the need is always there. You know, even if you write a little snippet of Python code, you're going to have a way to manage that and deliver it. It tends to be all kind of wrapped up in whatever, if it's lambdas or, you know, it's just kind of built into the platform and not done quite right. But I think this is kind of the next frontier.
I heard a phrase in what you said there, event-driven delivery. You just said it and you just sort of glossed over it. That's number one, you should get that trademarked now. This doesn't come out for a couple of weeks. You're good. But that's, it's going to be that kind of pivot that's going to happen. It has to.
I mean, we already have actually the underlying base for something like that. And that is Kubernetes. Kubernetes is all about being event-driven, right? You send an event to the API. You don't necessarily know who is listening to that event and what will happen. I mean, you know, because if you set it up and all those things, right? But Kubernetes itself is probably the biggest and the best example of event-driven architecture that we have today. It's just about, I think, that maybe we are still falling behind with the rest of the things that is sitting on top of Kubernetes to leverage that model to its fullness, let's say.
Yeah, and I'm nodding along, but I realize this is a podcast, so yeah.
It's okay. Audio, you can come back to our live stream if you dare.
Yeah, no, that I think this has been great.
If you're listening right now via Apple Podcasts, please go ahead and subscribe and leave a rating review. All of our contact information, including Twitter and LinkedIn, can be found at devopsparadox.com/contact. And if you'd like to be notified by email when a new episode is released, you can sign up at devopsparadox.com. That sign up form, it's at the top of every page. And there are links to the Slack workspace, the Voxer account, and how to leave a review in the description of this episode. Now, Tracy, do you feel like you felt safe today? You felt like you were in good hands?
Yes. No. Okay. I think this has been
yes or no. Good. What is it? Yes. Yes. No.
It's a maybe, I think.
No. I think it's good. I think when I'm shooting from the hip in a podcast, it's always a good uncomfortable. I don't like to be too comfortable. So there we go.
Yeah. And I'll say it. It's the elephant in the room. You're actually the first female that's been on the podcast.
Shame on us.
For real. Yeah.
Shame on us.
That's bad on us at 57. That's not okay. So
I can recommend a whole
host slew of people. Of
folks doing great stuff. Even other Tracys, as much as I want to be the Tracy of software delivery.
You are the Tracy of software. There it is. It's just Tracy. Like Beyonce, it's Tracy. As soon as we say Tracy, anything about software delivery.
Please don't. A few weeks ago, I attended some podcast from CDF, and I was wondering what happened to her voice for 10 minutes. When thinking that it was Tracy speaking instead of Tracy.
On the CDF board, we actually have two Tracys, not just in the CDF, but on the governing board, we have two Tracys. So it's we call ourselves Tracy Squared, and it's amazing because it's been a long time in tech. You get not just other women at the highest level, but another Tracy. So that's amazing.
So where can people find out about Continuous Delivery Foundation?
Yeah, I think the best place to start is our website, cd.foundation, and also Twitter, at cdeliveryfdn.
And where can people follow you?
Oh, please follow me on Twitter, at Tracy Miranda, no E in Tracy. And a great place for more off-the-hip opinions and frank discussions.
Hip opinions, maybe little toe opinions. Maybe some elbow opinions.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty good.
Okay. Tracy, thanks for putting up with us today. It was fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll have to have you back, too, because it felt like we just got started good asking all the questions.
You picked on all the hard things I said and asked for more details.
Yeah, well, that's sort of my job, right? Or maybe it is. Speaking of jobs, I actually have to get back to work. So I guess probably everybody else does, too. All right. Thanks again for listening to episode number 57 of DevOps Paradox.